He in my line. Maybe that's the real bloodline you descend from, Castile murmured as he led me past them. I raised my brows but said nothing as we entered the empty hall and then exited out into the yard. The snow had stopped, but my breath formed misty clouds. I was so going to regret leaving my cloak behind, even soaked with the stench of craven blood. As we made our way to the stables, unease formed upon the sight of leaves that glistened like rubies in the sunlight. No one was out there staring at it this morning, but I could swear the blood tree had grown even wider than it had been the day before. Crimson-hued sap still seeped across the snow in a network of thin lines of red, reminding me of veins or roots. Three horses were led out already, their ears perked, as a stable hand held their reins, nervously glancing toward the blood tree. Castile walked us past them, where Seti waited inside the stables. The massive black horse had been named after the god of war's warhorse. I used to think that the beautiful horse had big hooves to fill, but now, knowing the truth, I imagine Seti filled them just fine. As we approached the horse, Castile let go of my hand. My palm missed the warmth, which was something I'd never share. I walked up to Seti as Castile walked around to secure my satchel to where his own bag hung. My gaze crawled across the barn, stopping on a pole with a deep groove. Knowing what had caused that mark, I resisted the desire to look away from where Phillips had been killed with a bolt fired by Castile. But I made myself look, to remember. Phillips had somehow figured out the truth, or at the very least, that Castile was not who he claimed. He'd tried to help me escape, but I hadn't listened. I had no idea if Phillips had known the truth about the Ascended. He could have, but that didn't matter. He was dead, regardless. Exhaling slowly, I saw the very same bow attached to Seti's side. It was curved like the ones I'd used, but this one had a handle and an arrow already knocked in place. The weapon was unlike any I'd ever seen. It had to be Atlantean. I extended my hand to the horse, allowing him to sniff me. Remember me? Seti sniffed as Castile finished with the straps. The horse nudged my fingers and I grinned as I gently patted the bridge of his nose.
I think he missed you.
Castile joined me.
And I think he's been spoiled by all the attention you've showered upon him.
I didn't think it was possible to spoil any animal too much. I scratched him behind his ear. Castile was closer, and out of the corner of my eye I saw him stroke a hand down Seti's mane. Looking at the back of the barn, he lowered his hand.
I'll be right back.
Nibbling on my lower lip, I peeked over my shoulder. Castile strode across the barn to where an older woman had appeared. She held something dark in her hands. Seti nudged my fingers again, demanding my attention.
All right, all right.
I resumed petting him.
Sorry.
Stroking the long, graceful neck, I saw that Delano and Nail were already mounted. Kieran walked toward his horse, but it didn't appear as if Elijah was coming with us. A moment later, Castile returned.
Here, he said. You're going to need this until we reach Spess's End.
This turned out to be a cloak, a black one lined with soft fur. I turned to take it, but Castile moved behind me, draping it over my shoulders.
I had one of the seamstresses make it, since salvaging the old one was out of the question.
He continued as he reached around me. I didn't dare breathe too deeply as his fingers worked the buttons over my throat. I tried not to focus on how close he was or how... I swallowed a gasp as the backs of his fingers brushed my breasts, reminding me of last night. I really didn't need to think about that. His arms grazed my chest. How many buttons were there? I looked down and almost groaned. The line of shiny black discs extended just below the chest.
Just so you know, I burned it along with the craven, he went on, and my pulse thrummed as his chin grazed my cheek. We lucked out that one of the seamstresses already had this mostly finished. There. Now you'll be less likely to spend the entire trip begging for my body heat, though I'd be more than happy to appease such a request.
I was sure he would be. Thank you, I murmured.
His hands slipped away from the buttons to my shoulders, and then down my arms, leaving shivers in their wake. Shivers that spread down my front. Looking up, I saw Elijah heading our way. I almost waved at him in relief.
One moment, Castile called out,
and Elijah stopped. A moment later, he turned me in his arms so that I was facing him.
Are you all right?
I lifted my gaze to his. I briefly wondered how he could have such incredibly thick lashes.
Yes.
His gaze searched mine.
You're being very quiet.
I was. But how did I explain that it was because I had no idea how I was supposed to behave? I was sure that he'd probably find that silly, my lack of knowledge so great that I had no idea how to even pretend.
Is it what you did in the cell?
He asked. No, I answered quickly.
Is it the people here?
I shook my head. His features tensed.
Then, is it about last night?
No, I said without hesitation, probably too quickly, based on the sudden flare of light in his eyes. I'm just a little tired. He watched me intently.
I'm not sure it's that.
It is, I told him. It's not what happened last night or anything else. You know I didn't get a lot of sleep. He eyed me in a way that said he wasn't quite sure he believed my response, but after a moment he nodded. Stepping back, he motioned for Elijah to join us.
I still think you'll make good time,
Elijah said, as he grasped Seti's reins.
Let's hope so.
Castile's hands settled on my hips. I froze. Put one foot in the stirrup, he reminded me gently, and then grab the horn. I'll lift you. Feeling about 7 different kinds of inadequate, I reached up and gripped the horn. Most people learned to ride by the time they hit their teens.
You're not familiar with horses, eh?
Elijah asked. I shook my head, expecting to hear mockery in his tone, or at the very least, disbelief. I didn't hear any of that.
Never would have guessed that, seeing you over here all comfy with this temperamental ass. Hey!
Castile said.
You saying things like that is why he's a temperamental ass towards you.
Elijah laughed as Seti's ears lowered.
Make sure he teaches you how to ride,
he said, as Castile lifted me with ease.
You seem like a natural. That's on an exceedingly long to-do list of things I plan to teach her,
Castile replied, as I settled in the saddle. Did he really plan to do that? Excitement sparked. If I could ride and control a horse, I'd be able to travel easily once I was free. It would be a necessary skill, to be honest. Wait. What were the other things he planned? The grin Elijah sent to Castile didn't go unnoticed.
I bet you do.
Heat flooded my face, even though I'd only had an inkling of what the innuendo meant.
You still think you'll have the first group out within 2 days?
Castile asked, as he swung up behind me with startling ease. I was sure if I tried that, I'd end up belly-flopping across the saddle and then sliding off it.
I hope to get the first group out by tomorrow morning,
Elijah told him.
Good. I'll be waiting for them to arrive in Spess's End before I continue on to Atlantia. At least then I will feel a little better about crossing the Skotos, he said. But I don't want you to wait too long. Just because the western roads are clear now, you know they won't stay that way for long. And you know I'm not leaving until the last one is well on the way home.
Thinking of all the people being forced to abandon their homes saddened me. It didn't matter that it had been planned long before my arrival. I'd sped up those plans.
I know. That's why you've been entrusted with these people.
Castile took the reins Elijah handed him.
I expect to see you home, my friend.
You will.
Elijah looked at me.
Keep our prince in line, and do so vigilantly. I expect to hear many stories that involve you throwing down with him.
You really don't need to encourage her.
Castile curled an arm around my waist, and a heartbeat later I was nestled between his thighs, my back pressed to his front. Although I hadn't forgotten about the lack of personal space while on horseback, my memories of it had dimmed. I wasn't sure I needed the cloak, but I knew from past experience that there was no point in sitting straight as a pole. All I would succeed in doing was causing my back to ache and my bones to feel jostled. And besides, I didn't think a happy fiancé would pull away from her intended husband. And truthfully, I didn't want to. I had no idea how much of that desire had to do with avoiding how uncomfortable it would be, or if it was because of last night, his gift, the pantry, the secrets he shared, and all the moments in between. Elijah bent his arm, pressing his fist to his heart.
From blood and ash, we will rise,
Castile finished, and my stomach dipped in response. Those words were the mark of the Dark One, his promise to his people and his supporters scattered throughout the kingdoms that they would rise again. Those words had once been a harbinger of chaos, the bringer of pain and death. And now the Dark One sat behind me. I was to marry him, temporarily, and I'd allowed him to kiss me, to touch.
Because we were pretending, none of this was real. Until next time,
Elijah bowed in my direction. I hope your travels are uneventful, I said, surprising myself, and maybe even Castile, because his arm tightened in response. I meant it because, well, I liked the way Elijah always laughed, even when it annoyed me. And the people here didn't need to experience any more violence or heartbreak.
As do I,
Elijah grinned, stepping back.
Though I doubt she needs it. Keep her safe, Prince.
I always keep what is mine safe,
Castile murmured, and my eyes narrowed as he gave Seti a soft nudge. Seti trotted forward. The other three were waiting, and we ended up in the middle of the group as we rode out into the yard and past the eerie warning the gods had left behind. My heart matched the steady thud of Seti's hooves as I gripped the pommel.
Where are your gloves?
Castile asked. I found my voice after a moment. In the satchel.
They won't do any good there.
He switched the reins to the hand that was at my waist, and then he was handing them over.
Spessa's End is farther south. It will be warmer there.
I took the gloves, slowly pulling them on while my heart leapt. Up ahead, the roofs of homes came into view. Sparing a look behind me, I saw only the edges of the stone keep before it too disappeared. The mixture of nervousness and anticipation swirling inside me was a strange companion as I turned back around. In a few minutes, once we left the rise surrounding New Haven, there would be no more chances to escape if I wanted to. We would be traveling too far to the east. I had to be fully committed to this deal I'd struck with Castile, to his plan, because now there was no turning back. By the way, I'm not yours, I told him. I don't belong to anyone but myself. Nothing changes that.
What if I just wanted a piece of you?
He shifted the reins to his other hand, a tiny piece that belonged to me.
I can think of a few I would love to have, Princess.
My cheeks warmed. I bet you can.
His laugh was rough and deep. Tell me what piece of you I can have.
It can be any piece of your choosing. Whatever it is, I'll take it. His chin grazed my cheek. It will be my most prized possession. I didn't offer Castile a piece of me as we rode forward, joining the others. There was no reason to, because what he didn't know was that he already held too many of them. Chapter 20. You've been entirely too quiet today, Castile pointed out again, several hours into the ride to Spessa's End. Have I? I asked, knowing full well there was no point denying it. The back of my neck tightened. Conversation had hummed all around me. Jokes had been shared. Playful insults were often traded. And while Castile was their prince, his status did not give him immunity. Few questions and comments had been directed at me, mostly about my training and how I was able to keep it hidden. Other than explaining how I trained with Victor, I remained silent. There was less opportunity for me to mess up that way. You have, he said. Aware of how close Delano and Nail were, riding only a few paces behind us, I said, I've been caught up in the scenery.
The scenery, he repeated. You've been engrossed in staring at trees.
My brow creased as I nodded. Tall pines crowded the road to Spessa's End, growing so close to one another their branches stretched from tree to tree. Very little could be seen beyond them.
I had no idea you were so invested in the common evergreen.
The corners of my lips turned down as I stiffened, pulling away from where I'd been leaning into Castile. I would think you'd be grateful that I'm quiet.
Why in the world would you think I'd be grateful for that?
I sent him an arched brow over my shoulder.
Really?
I drawled in a low voice. His eyes narrowed as I returned to staring at the snow-topped pines. He nudged Seti forward. The large horse responded at once, drawing ahead of the group.
What's really going on with you?
He asked, his voice low.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I lifted my head at the flutter of wings. A bird larger than I'd ever seen took flight from the top of one of the pines, soaring gracefully into the sky. The wingspan was enormous, at least several feet.
Good gods, what kind of bird is that?
I do believe it's a silverhawk.
They're known to snatch small animals and even children if they're hungry enough. My eyes widened. I'd heard stories about birds that could pick up children, but I thought they were just tales.
I'm sure many things in these woods are the subject of such tales, but there is only one tale I'm interested in hearing.
Using his arm around my waist to tug me back against him, his voice was just above my ear as he added,
And that's why you're suddenly as quiet as a ghost. Do you need to hold me this tightly to ask that question?
I snapped. He chuckled.
There she is, my princess.
I've been here this whole time, and I'm not your princess.
Technically, you are my princess, and no, you haven't been here the whole time.
He replied.
The Poppy I know isn't quiet and meek, at least not the one without the veil. I stared ahead mutinously as his observation struck too close to home for comfort. And this Poppy, the one who says nothing, only showed up this morning, he went on. You say it's not because you chose to be the one who ended that bastard ascended's life. I know you well enough to believe that.
I don't know why you think you know me so well. I retorted,
even though he did know more about me than anyone, including Victor, Tawny, and my brother.
I know you did what you felt was right, and that is the end of that. You're not one to wallow in your choices, he said,
and he was right.
Ugh. You said it wasn't because of last night, and I'm inclined to believe that to be the truth.
If I said I didn't care what you believe, would it make a difference and force you to be quiet?
No.
I sighed.
I'm a wagering sort of man. So, I'm willing to bet it has everything to do with our understanding. Irritation flared hotly. Why did he have to be so observant? It was annoying.
So, instead of telling me nothing is wrong, I'm hoping you'll be honest with me. I'm hoping that hawk returns and instead of snatching up poor helpless animals and children, it grabs you.
Castile laughed, the sound rumbling through me. I knew if I turned around, I would see the hint of fangs and those damn dimples.
I fear that your hopes will go unanswered.
As per usual, I muttered. He ignored that.
I'm not going to let this go, and you of all people should know that I'm persistent when I want something.
A shiver curled down my spine, and the hand that had ended up between the folds of my cloak at some point during the journey slid from my hip to my stomach. Swallowing hard, I ordered myself to think of anything that didn't involve his hand and how low it sat on my belly.
Talk to me, Poppy, he whispered, near my ear as his fingers began to move.
Every cell in my body seemed to focus on those digits.
Please.
Please. The soft request caught me off guard. It was so rare to hear that word pass his lips, even before his identity had been revealed. I gave a small shake of my head. I don't know how to act. He angled his head so he could look at me.
What do you mean?
His fingers were still moving, tracing circles that swept above my navel, and then below. My face felt hot, and I wasn't sure if it was due to embarrassment or the slow, lazy pace of his movements, which reminded me too much of those dark early morning hours. I don't know how I'm supposed to behave in a way that will convince others that we're together. His fingers halted for a heartbeat and then started moving once more.
You just need to be yourself, Poppy.
That sounded easier said than done. Being myself would likely mean arguing with you constantly.
And threatening to stab me, he interjected. I know.
And how is me threatening to stab you going to convince anyone that this engagement is real?
I admit, that would lead the average person to believe there were no fond feelings between us. But no one would believe that I would choose a submissive maiden over my brother. They'd expect me to fall for someone as fiery as she is kind, brave, even to a fault, someone who pushes back.
His fingers now moved up and down in a straight line, but for once his words were far more distracting.
They'd expect someone like you, to be honest, not the veiled maiden.
That is not who you are. Unsettled by what he'd said, my grip tightened on the pommel. You're right, I'm not the veiled maiden, not anymore, but I... My gaze lifted to the strip of gray sky. It's what I'm used to, I guess. I'm not used to this.
I imagine you're not used to any of this, and I don't mean the whole being kidnapped part.
A wry grin twisted my lips. All of this is new. The lack of the veil and being allowed to speak whenever I want, to whomever I want, or being able to use my abilities and not hide them. I can't even remember the last time I ate supper at a table with more than just one or two people. I'm not used to being in a room full of individuals, being the center of attention, yet somehow still invisible to them. I trailed off before I admitted what had found its way to the surface. I wasn't sure if even I knew who I was without the veil and all its limitations. Because even though there were still rules, new ones to follow, this was unlike anything before. I guess what I was like as the maiden...
What you were forced to be like as the maiden, he corrected softly.
I nodded. I guess it's what I'm comfortable with when I don't know what's expected of me. And silence, docility, was always expected.
But was it easy?
The sweep of his fingers drifting even lower snagged my attention.
sending a flash of molten heat through me and causing me to wonder if I had the foresight to set boundaries with this whole agreement. Surely what he was doing with his hand wouldn't convince anyone of our relationship, since it was hidden beneath the cloak.
"Princess?"
he murmured, his lips grazing my ear. I exhaled, shakily, hoping that what Kieran had said about Castile and a woven's ability to scent desire was grossly exaggerated. I often wanted to scream, just scream for no good reason in the middle of the Great Hall during the City Council meetings. I would have loved to have screamed right in Priestess Analia's face. He barked out a short, rough laugh.
I would have expected a far more violent desire when it came to that bitch. And I still don't use that word very often, yet I use it proudly when it comes to her.
I grinned, feeling a savage joy at seeing the priestess's eyes widen when Hawk had put her in her place. And I hated just standing there and listening to the Duke get upset because I didn't walk quietly enough.
He seriously lectured you about that?
Yes, I laughed, but there was nothing funny about any of this. He'd lecture me about anything, find any reason for a lesson, not standing straight enough, being too quiet, not speaking quickly enough when spoken to. When I was allowed to respond, which was ever-changing, I shook my head. I wanted to scream in his face. No, that's not true. I wanted to punch him. Often, with my fists. I paused. With a dagger. Castile was silent for a moment. How did you deal with him? That's something I can't wrap my head around. You're not weak. You're not a pushover. That's inherently the opposite of who you are. How did you never push back? I stiffened, feeling shame creep in. I couldn't.
I know that. He immediately reassured. I didn't mean to suggest that you could have. You were trapped, just like I was, and if anyone thinks you should have, then they've never been in a position where they had to do anything to survive.
I relaxed a little. It took a couple of times for me to learn how to disassociate from it. I would be there, but I would think of something, anything else. Sometimes I thought about all the ways I would one day pay him back for every foul thing he did or said. Other times I imagined training with Victor. When it was too hard to focus, I just counted. I would count as high as I could. He seemed to have stopped breathing.
I'm glad I killed him.
Me too. I cleared my throat. Anyway, it wasn't always easy, but sometimes it was easier to just do what they wanted, to be what they expected. I know that sounds terrible, maybe, to those who've never survived a cane to the skin for no reason. His voice had hardened. We all do what we need to survive. I did countless things I never thought I would do, he admitted freely, without an ounce of shame. And I envied that. But our situations were different. His was a matter of survival, life and death. Mine was not that. But I think choosing the easier path is why I ignored my suspicions about the Ascended, or at least it helped to dismiss them.
I don't think you were alone in choosing that path. I'm sure many others in Solis have shared your suspicions, but it was easier to look past them, even if that meant suffering or sacrifice.
I nodded. Because the alternative would be the upending of everything you believe to be true. And not only that, it comes with the realization of the part you played. At least for me it does. I was toted out to the people, put on display to remind everyone that the gods could choose anyone. That they too could be blessed one day. And I always knew I wasn't chosen. I whispered the last part, my chest heavy. But I went along with it, and the whole time they were stealing children to feed on. taking good people and turning them into monsters. The easier choice I made too often didn't make me a part of the problem. Castile said nothing, but his fingers still moved idly. It made me a part of the system that bound an entire kingdom in chains, created of fear and false beliefs. I turned my cheek toward him. You know that's true.
Yes.
His breath danced along the corner of my lips.
It is true.
I lowered my gaze to the hardened soil of the road.
But you know what else is true?
Right now, you are destroying an intricate section of the system that has chained an entire kingdom for hundreds of years, he added. You should never forget that you were once an accessory. But you also shouldn't forget what you are now a part of. I looked forward at the narrow road ahead and the snow-heavy needles. But does the present really make amends for the past? Castile didn't answer immediately.
Who is the judge of that? The gods? They sleep.
Society? How can they make decisions unbiasedly when they are prejudiced by their own sins? He questioned, and I had no answer. Let me ask you this. Do you blame Victor? I frowned. For what? He was like a father to you, Poppy. He had to know how much you struggled with the whole maiden thing. Even if he didn't realize how much you struggled, he had to have seen it. The last conversation I'd had with Victor, right before the attack at the right, had been about how I truly felt being the maiden. And he knew what the Duke was doing to you, didn't he? But he didn't stop it, he added quietly. I craned my head to the side. What could he have done? If he spoke one word or intervened, he would have been fired and ostracized, and that is a fate close to a death sentence. Or he would have been killed, and then I wouldn't have been trained. I never would have learned how to defend myself. Victor did everything he could, I defended vehemently, just like my mother and father did the night they were killed. But one could argue that the right thing would have been to intervene, to stop the Duke from hurting you, he said. And I know I'm not one to talk about doing the right thing, but he could have chosen the more difficult path. Either way, you don't hold it against him, and if you did, you've forgiven him, right? Heart aching, I faced forward. There was nothing to forgive, but he... You heard what he said to me before he died. He apologized for failing you, Castile confirmed. Tears burned the backs of my eyes. His last words ever spoken were brutal. I hadn't regretted what I'd said to him before the attack, but now... Now I wished I hadn't spoken so freely. I would do anything for Victor to have died feeling as if he'd done right by me. And he had done just that to the best of his ability. He was the reason I could hold a sword and fire an arrow, fight with my hands and my mind. I think Victor knew that you never held his inaction against him, but whether or not he believed he'd done all that he could was up to him. Castile continued softly. I think it comes down to whether you can make amends with yourself. I saw the point he was making, but I didn't know if anything I did from this moment on would be enough to erase being a silent party to the Ascended. In the meantime, while you try to figure out if you can make amends with yourself, it helps to find someone to blame, and in your case, and Victor's, blame can be shared. With the Ascended? I surmised. Do you not agree? The Ascended created the system Victor and I and everyone else became a part of, unintentionally reinforced, and ultimately became victims of in different ways. My mother hadn't been able to defend herself or me because of the limitations the Ascended placed upon women. Families handed over their children to the court or to the temples,
because the Ascended taught them it was the only way to appease the gods, and then used the very monsters they created to reinforce those fears. Mr. Tulis made the choice to shove a knife deep inside me, but the kingdom the Ascended created was what drove him to do that. Victor could never speak against the Duke without repercussions. That would have either had him removed from my life completely or ended his. And I had my freedom stripped from me and was kept so sheltered that I could turn to no one with my suspicions. And the Queen, she who cared for me so tenderly, was the foundation of that system. There was no denying that, nor was there any denying that the system would only strengthen and grow unless access to the Atlanteans was cut off. Even without the ability to make more Ascended, they would still be strong if they remained in control, if Castile's father did not go to war against them. But war was never one-sided. Casualties always piled up on both sides, and the losses were always the greatest among the most innocent. Many of those who would be free if Atlantia went to war with Solas would die before they even realized how much they'd been chained. Yes, they are to blame, I said finally, raggedly. I had no idea how we strayed so far off topic. Brushing a stray piece of hair back from my face, I cleared my throat. So, there is your answer to why I've been quiet. If I'd known that insulting and threatening you would convince others of our agreement, I would have pulled a knife on you this morning in the banquet hall.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, he said, squeezing me. But, if I may make a suggestion, I would stop calling our engagement an agreement or understanding. That sounds entirely too businesslike, as if we're discussing the trade of milk cows.
But isn't that what this is?
I would say that what we have is a very intimate agreement.
So, no. What we have is simply an impersonal agreement and nothing more.
Impersonal? Is that so?
His hand drifted lower over the flap of buttons on my pants. My breath hitched.
Yes.
Truly?
Yes,
I hissed.
Interesting. It didn't seem impersonal last night,
he murmured, and then caught the lobe of my ear between his teeth. I gasped, my eyes wide as the little nip set fire to my blood. Slowly freeing the sensitive flesh, he chuckled as his lips touched the space behind my ear, and then I felt the indecent thrill of his sharp teeth dragging over the skin of my throat. For a moment, all thoughts scattered. My boiling blood roared in my ears, through my body, tightening my breasts and settling between my legs, where his fingers ventured dangerously close. They made those tiny circles that tugged at the seam of my pants, rubbing it against my very center. My back arched without thought, and a hidden, reckless part of me wished I could will those fingers lower.
And now? He repeated. Sure doesn't feel impersonal.
I reacted without thought, slamming my elbow into his stomach. Castile grunted out a curse.
Please don't fight atop the horse,
Delano called out from somewhere behind us.
None of us wish to watch Seti trample either of you.
Speak for yourself,
came Kieran's droll voice. Castile straightened behind me.
Don't worry, neither of us will fall. It was just a love tap.
That did not look like a love tap,
Nail commented.
That's because it was a very passionate one, Castile replied.
You're about to get a love tap to your face, I muttered under my breath. Castile curled his arm more firmly around my waist as he laughed.
There's the vicious little creature I missed.
Whatever, I grumbled. He leaned into me, lowering his voice once more. Back to the original subject at hand. Our engagement is far more believable when you're hitting me than when you're standing by quietly. My brows snapped together. That sounds like a very dysfunctional engagement. You can't spell dysfunctional without fun now, can you? That, I don't even know what to say to that. My point is that you just need to be yourself, princess. Couples argue, they fight. Most don't go around stabbing or punching the other. Most don't start off being lied to or kidnapped, I interrupted. True, which has led to the stabbing and punching, but people who are in love enough to marry, the ones that people know are together before they even realize it, never consist of just one person, one personality, or one will. They fight, they argue, they disagree, they make up, they talk, they agree. The thing they never are is perfect. Are you telling me that the key for us is to fight and make up? I asked. Because there was no way one could look at us, see the way we behaved toward each other, and think we were madly in love. They probably thought we were insane. What I'm telling you is that there is no one way anyone behaves in a relationship. There isn't a textbook of things to do or how to behave, with the exception of the stabbing. I take back my fun and dysfunctional statement. Thank the gods. I just want to make sure you understand that. So when you're free and if you decide to leave, if? You mean when I leave? Yes, my apologies, he demurred. When you leave and go out into the world and find yourself a mate who has never lied, or kidnapped me, or kidnapped you, there should be no stabbing or punching, only kisses and promises upheld until dying breaths and beyond, he said. That is what you deserve from who you choose to love. I didn't know what to make of that, of him speaking of me loving someone else, loving someone for real. Acid pooled in my stomach. The thing is, you won't mess up if you get mad. You won't do the wrong thing. Each couple is different. Some spend their time whispering sweet words in each other's ears. Some spend the time baiting one another, both enjoying being the tiger in the cat and mouse chase. That is us, he said, or who we appear to others. This won't be hard, not with the passion between us. And before you try to lie and say there is none, just know that it would provoke me into proving I'm right. The last thing I needed was for him to prove that he was right. There was passion between us, whether it was right or wrong, and I supposed it would be far harder to do this if we couldn't physically bear one another's touch. And what he said made too much sense. Not the nonsense about us both being the cat in the cat and mouse chase, which made no sense whatsoever. However, the part about there being no textbook to follow, no guidelines, did make sense. So much so, it felt like something I should have known. You probably think I'm foolish for not knowing.
I don't think you're foolish. I never have. Well, I take that back. I thought you were pretty foolish when you tried to escape,
he said, and my eyes rolled. You've never been in a relationship, and you really haven't been around many normal ones, so I understand why you wouldn't be sure how to act. And it's not like this is a normal situation. Feeling a little better, I relaxed some. And you've been in a relationship. I mean, you said you've been in love before.
I have.
I watched the snow slip from branches as we passed, thinking of Alistair's daughter, Shay. That was such a beautiful name, and maybe since Castile had shared things with me before, he would be willing to talk about her. What happened? His fingers stilled, and he was quiet for so long that I didn't think he'd answer, which made me all the more curious. But then he spoke. "She's gone." Even though I already knew that, I felt a piercing ache in my heart, and I opened myself to him without giving it much thought. The moment I connected with him, I was hit by a wave of anguish so potent that it almost shielded the thread of anger underneath. I'd been right. Castile's pain and sadness wasn't just for his brother. It was also for this faceless woman. I thought about what Castile had told me the night of the rite, before the attack. He'd taken me to the willow in the gardens, and he'd told me about a place he used to go with his brother and his best friend, a cavern they had turned into their own private world. He said that he'd lost his brother and then his best friend a few years later. Could that best friend have been Shay, this woman he loved? But his pain. Before I even knew what I was doing, I'd let go of the saddle and started to remove my glove.
"Don't,"
he warned softly, and my hands froze.
"I appreciate the gesture, but I don't need you to take away my pain, nor do I want that."
Still connected to him, I couldn't imagine how that was possible. The agony that waited beneath the smirks and the teasing glances, under all his masks, was nearly unbearable. It threatened to drag me to the frozen ground. Being trampled by Seti was almost preferable to what festered from the wounds that couldn't be seen. "Why wouldn't you want that?"
"Because the pain is a reminder and a warning, one I plan never to forget."
I severed the connection as nausea threatened to creep up my throat.
Did she die because of the Ascended?"
"Everything that has rotted my life has been tied to the Ascended," he said, his hand returning to my hip.
"I'm tied to the Ascended," I said, before I could stop myself, before I could ignore the strange stinging. Castile didn't respond. He didn't say anything. Seconds ticked by and turned into minutes, and it felt as if there was a band tightening around my chest. Staring straight ahead, I spent the next however many hours wondering how he could stand to even be near me, so close to someone tied to the Ascended as I was. They took his brother. They took the person he loved. They took his freedom. What else could they take from him? His life? A chill swept over my skin as I sat straight, my hands clutching the saddle. The idea of Castile dying, of him no longer being there with those frustrating smirks and teasing glances, his quick-witted replies and those damn infuriating dimples, I couldn't even consider it. He was too vivid, too bright to think of him no longer being there. But he would be gone one day, when this was all over and we parted ways. He would be gone from my life. That was what I wanted, what I planned. Then why did I suddenly feel like crying? We camped out near the road several hours after the sun had set. It was cold, but not nearly as cold as it had been in the Blood Forest. Castile hadn't spoken much beyond offering me food or asking if I needed a break. But as I lay there in the middle of the starless night, he returned to my side, stretching out behind me. I woke in his arms. The next 3 days were just like that. Castile barely spoke. Whatever he felt, and I didn't open myself up to him to truly know, was a shadow colder than the nights. So many times I wanted to ask, I wanted to tell him what I knew about Shay, that I was sorry he'd lost her. I wanted to ask questions about her, about them. I wanted him to do what Alistair had said he hadn't. I wanted him to talk, because I knew his silence fed his anguish. I said nothing, though, telling myself it wasn't my place, that the less I knew, the better. But he came to my side in the night, and he was there when a nightmare found me, waking me before I could give sound to the screams building inside me. He held me in silence, his hand stroking my back until I fell back to sleep. The nightmares, they were different, patchy, as if I were popping in and out of them instead of following the events of the night as before. They didn't make any sense to me, either. Not the wounds on my mother, not the screams or the choking smoke, not that creepy voice whispering about bleeding poppies. It was like the nightmares weren't real anymore. That was what I was thinking about as we saddled the horses and traveled the road to Spessa's End on the fourth day. I had no idea how much time had passed when I saw something in the trees to my left. I couldn't make out what it was, and just when I thought I was seeing things, I saw it again, several trees down the road. It hung from a limb, stripped of pine needles and bare of snow. A rope shaped into some kind of symbol. A circle. I twisted in my seat, but I couldn't find where it had been in the mass of trees. The arm around my waist tightened, the first reaction from Castile in days. I could feel the tension in his arm as I scanned the woods. The shape tugged at the recesses of my memory. It looked like something I'd seen before. To the right, I saw it again. A brown rope hanging from another bare limb, fashioned almost like a noose, but with a stick or something crossing through the center. I'd seen something similar in the Blood Forest, except it had been created out of rocks and had reminded me of the Royal Crest. But now I could see this more clearly. I realized it was only like the crest. It wasn't a straight line like an arrow, situated at a slant, but one that was slanted in the opposite direction. And that wasn't a stick bound to the rope. It was too ashen in color. The ends, knobby. Oh, gods. It was a bone. Seti slowed, and Castile's arm slid away from me. Slowly, I lifted my gaze, and trepidation took hold. There were dozens of them, hanging amongst the trees, all different, at dizzying heights. Castile, I said quietly, do you see what's in the trees?
Yes.
I saw the same shapes in the Blood Forest.
Cass.
Kieran's voice was low, barely audible.
I know,
he answered, and I heard a quiet snap of a clasp. When his arm came back around me, he held the strange bow in my lap. As close as it was, I could see that the knocked bow was thicker than normal, and although I'd seen the kind of damage the bolt could do, it was still somehow unfathomable. I stared at the bow and the bloodstone arrow. Is it craven? I asked, having seen the rocks right before they arrived. I looked down, seeing no mist.
I don't think Craven have started to decorate trees with craft projects, Princess, he said,
and my heart gave a stupid little leap. It was the first time he'd called me that in days. He shifted the handle of the bow into my hand.
The lovely decorations are courtesy of the Dead Bones Clan.
The what? I turned my head toward his.
They used to live all across Solus, especially where the Blood Forest is now. But they've since relocated to these woods and hills over the past several decades.
I've never heard of them.
There are a lot of things the Ascended don't share with the people of Solus, like the fact that there are people who live and survive outside the protection of the Rise.
How? I demanded.
Many of the villages outfitted with smaller Rises were often overrun by Craven. They survive by any means necessary. For this clan, one of those means is by slaughtering anyone they view as a threat. Supposedly they eat who they kill,
and will often use the flesh for masks and bones. Well, you already saw what they like to do with the bones. You know what they say. Waste not, want not. My mouth dropped open.
Yeah, princess. There really aren't any words. We try to avoid them when we pass through here. Normally, we don't have any problems. But in case we do, he folded a hand over mine. Feel this metal piece? It's the trigger. You aim this bow just like you would a normal one, but instead of pulling the string back, you press on this and it fires the arrow. I had so many questions, but I curled my finger around the wooden handle, getting a feel for its weight. Instinct told me that the important thing was to focus on his instructions. Okay. The arrow is knocked the same, except it's held in place. All you need to do is aim and pull the trigger. Bloodstone bolts will also kill mortals, he instructed. You know what to do if we have any problems with these people. Stay alive.
I started to respond, but Kieran shouted. No more than a second later, Castile jerked me back against him. The handle of the bow pressed into my stomach as something whizzed mere inches from my face. My head jerked to the right as a branch on the other side of the road snapped in two, taken down by... The trees! Nail shouted. To the left! Castile wheeled Seti, guiding the powerful horse around so that I was facing to the right. He shifted in the saddle, his body pressing mine down as flat as I could go. There was another shot, and then Castile was gone from Seti's back, driven to the ground. Chapter 21. Castile! I shouted, my heart slamming against my ribs. Twisting in the saddle, I gripped the bow as I looked down. Rolling out of the path of Seti's hooves, Castile rose to his knees. My stomach dropped at the sight of the arrows jutting out of his back. One was lodged in his left shoulder. Another was near the center of his back, just to the right. Blood already darkened his black cloak. Soulless bastards! Someone shouted from the trees. You're gonna die today! Another arrow blew past my face, missing me by inches. Panic exploded in my chest as Seti pranced in a tight circle, startled. He's okay, I told myself as I gripped the saddle horn with my other hand. He was an Atlantean. Two arrows couldn't take him down. He's okay. I'd stabbed him in the actual heart, and he'd been fine. He's okay. Seti reared. My grip on the pommel slipped. I had no idea how to control a horse, and if I let go to grab the reins, I would fall. I was no way near as fast as Castile. My wild gaze darted over the heavy tree line as Nail shouted a curse, taking an arrow to the leg. Seti slammed down on his front hooves, rattling me to my very bones. I lost my grip and slipped. The sky turned sideways. An arm snagged me from behind. The scent of rich spice and citrus in the fresh snow enveloped me. Castile yanked me down as Delano suddenly appeared on Seti's other side, catching Seti's reins. He rose to a crouch on the saddle and leapt onto the horse's back, keeping his mount's reins in his other hand. Sliding into the seat, he dug his heels in, urging Seti and his horse into the woods to the right. A blur of fawn-colored fur shot past us, into the woods. Kieran. Several heartbeats later, I heard a yelp and a high-pitched scream as Castile all but carried me into the trees to the right. Fucking Wolven! The man hooted, his enthusiastic response quite at odds with what came out of his mouth next. This just became our lucky day, boys. The gods are good. Castile spun suddenly, shielding my body with his. He jerked and growled out a sharp curse, and I knew he'd taken another arrow. This is getting extremely annoying, he snarled, thrusting me behind a tree. He tossed the quiver of arrows I hadn't seen him grab toward me. Don't get shot.
That will be even more annoying.
How about you try not getting shot again?
An arrow now protruded from Castile's lower back, and he was still standing there. In the back of my mind, I knew why. He was Atlantean. But all I could think as I saw the three arrows pierced through him was, what if he weren't? He'd be dead, and I...
But I make wearing arrows look good, don't I?
Castile twisted sharply, his hand snapping out. He caught the next arrow intended for him. I stared at him.
I don't know why any of you think this is your lucky day,
he yelled back as he turned around. He shattered the arrow in his fist.
It's really not. Not when my cloak has been ruined. And I really liked it. It was warm, and now it has God's damn holes in it. How will that keep me warm?
Something about him being more upset about his ruined cloak than he was about having multiple holes in his body had a strange calming effect on me. My hands stopped trembling as I focused on the pines across the road. I knew how to fire a bow. I was very good at it. Victor had claimed that I was one of the best archers he'd seen. I had the steady hands for it, the watchful eye, and the quick reflexes. That was why Castile had handed the bow over to me. He knew I could use it. And I had the steady hands now. A sound began, a great wave of rattling that reminded me of those wooden toys with beads inside that infants often enjoyed. It seemed to come from all directions, like the rasping of dry bones. The hairs on my neck stood on end. Rapidly scanning the other side of the road for any movement that wasn't fawn-colored, I lifted the bow as Nail joined Castile. My finger curled around the trigger as I kept searching. A muddied brown shape briefly appeared between the pines. I didn't hesitate, not for a second. I leveled the bow just as my target lifted his weapon, taking aim at Nail. I pressed on the trigger. The bolt released with a whoosh, flying across the road. I already knew I'd hit my target when I reached for another heavier, thicker arrow. Movement caught my eyes. I looked just in time to see Castile launch into the air. He jumped higher than he stood, which was well over 6 feet. My lips parted as he landed on a limb, shaking free pine needles and snow dust. All I could see was his arm punch into the shadows of the limb. A second later, he yanked a mortal out, tossing him to the ground. Delano shot from the forest. In his woven form, he was nothing more than a streak of white fur. He caught the mortal before he hit the ground, whipping his large head and shaking the man like a dog did his favorite toy. I heard a cracking sound, and then Delano dropped the broken mortal. Blood streaked Delano's fur as he lunged, catching another clansman around the throat that Castile had thrown down from the tree from, dear gods, from higher up. Dragging my eyes from what I was unlikely to ever forget, I knocked another bolt, firing at another mortal that popped out from between two trees. Loading the bow, I twisted at the waist, leaned out, damn bloodsuckers, boys be fast! That first voice came again, somewhere from the trees. We ain't dealing with just wolven. Aim for the head. Okay, the fact that this Dead Bones clan knew about the wolven and the Atlanteans was interesting, and I... Fiery pain lanced through my skin as an arrow shot by me, grazing my arm. I sucked in a sharp breath as I darted back behind the elm, shaking my wrist as if that would somehow lessen the burn. It didn't help all that much. Screams of pain pierced through the distant snarls. Gritting my teeth, I looked over my shoulder, no longer seeing Castile or Delano. Nail was gone too. I stayed still until I saw a shifting of shadows and a flash of movement to my left. I zeroed in on it. I fired the bolt just as the sound of pounding feet whipped my attention to the right. A man ran at me. At least I thought the tall, broad shape was a man, but I couldn't be sure. His face was covered by something that looked like leather. Clumps of brown hair poked out from the mask. He carried no bow, but rather some sort of club. He was fast for someone his size.
Shit,
I whispered, whirling toward the quiver. I grabbed a bolt and knocked it quickly. The man swung the club before I could fire. I ducked, but wasn't fast enough. His club caught the bow, knocking it from my grip with one shattering blow. He laughed.
What kind of bitch are you?
He asked as I jumped back. I recognized the man's voice. He'd been the one shouting, and now that he was only a foot or so from me, I could see why I thought his mask was made of leather. And I could also see that Castile hadn't been joking when he said that the Dead Bones clan operated on the waste not, want not creed. It was skin. Human skin that had been stretched to fit over his head. Stitched in jagged pieces around the openings that had been created for the eyes and mouth. My stomach churned, but I didn't cave to the rising nausea.
Are you part dog? Or do you like to suck on things?
He asked, switching the club to his left hand.
If you beg nicely, I got something you can suck on.
He reached down, grabbing what I could only assume he was referencing.
Your face may be a mess, but your mouth sure looks fine.
Heart pounding, I darted out of reach of the club as he swung it again. I reached inside my cloak, unsheathing my dagger. I stilled, waiting as my fingers opened and closed around the handle. I had to be quick and smart. I'd only have one chance.
I bet you're one of those wolven bitches. Here they like their women all cut up.
He made a calling sound, one used to summon a dog, and my grip tightened.
Tell me, girl, what kind of bitch are you?
He lifted the club again, and I made my move, shooting forward. I slipped under his arm and grabbed the dirty tunic. Thrusting the dagger up, I used every ounce of strength I had to drive it deep under his chin. I'm this kind of bitch, I growled. The muscles under the mask, pieced together by human flesh, went lax as I jerked the knife free. Blood spurted in a hot spray.
Whatever he was about to say ended in a gurgle.
The club fell from his hand, and then he toppled like a tree, straight and forward,
taking me down with him.
I hit the pine-needled, snow-crusted ground with a grunt as air punched out of my lungs. The man was limp, his grotesquely masked face smashed into my shoulder.
Damn it,
I muttered as his heavy weight sank onto me. He smelled like rot and other things I didn't want to think about. I tipped my head back against the ground.
This is just great.
A flutter of wings drew my gaze to the sky. My eyes narrowed as the large hawk from before appeared overhead, gracefully circling before disappearing into the trees. A wing, caressed by the sun, gleamed silver. I really hoped my new cloak didn't end up drenched in blood. Sighing, I gathered up my strength and shoved at the man, managing to get him at least partway off my chest. I drew in a deep breath. The man was suddenly lifted up and tossed aside, like he was nothing more than a bag of small rocks. I had no idea where he landed. All I could do was stare at Castile. He stood above me, his face splattered with dots of red.
You're bleeding. You have 3 arrows sticking out of you. You've been injured. Where?
He knelt beside me, ignoring my somewhat unnecessary observation. I'm fine. I sat up, my eyes glued to the arrow jutting from his stomach as I sheathed my dagger. Does it hurt?
What?
The arrows. I paused as he grasped my left arm, pushing the cloak aside. The arrows that are sticking out of your body.
It's nothing more than an annoyance.
He turned my arm, and I winced.
Sorry,
he said, gruffly, as he exposed the tear in the sleeve of my tunic. They're inside your body, I repeated. How can that only be an annoyance? Is it because you're from an elemental bloodline?
Yes.
his features sharpened as he carefully peeled back the edge of my sweater.
The wounds will heal as soon as I pull the arrows out.
Then why haven't you done that yet?
Because they will not fester, unlike your wound if dirt gets into it.
His gaze flicked up and his eyes snagged my focus. The pupils seemed larger.
Are you worried about me, princess?
I clamped my mouth shut.
You are, aren't you? I heard you scream my name when I fell from the horse,
he continued. And it was weird for him to tease after riding in silence for hours, and with three arrows sticking out of him.
Your concern warms the same heart you've so grievously wounded.
I shot him a glare. You're no good to me, Dad. One side of his lips quirked up as he stared at my arm.
Looks like a flesh wound. You'll live.
I told you I was fine.
Still needs to be covered.
He rose, bringing me with him. Stepping back, he tore off a piece of his cloak.
Not the most hygienic of options, but it will work until we reach Spessa's end.
The crunch of needles drew my gaze. I saw Delano slinking between the pines, still in his woven form. Streaks of red stained his fur. His pale-eyed gaze moved from Castile to me, and then he took off in a powerful lunge, darting between the trees. Where is he going?
Probably to retrieve the horses,
Castile answered. I glanced up at him. He stood beside me, holding my arm in one hand and the cloth in the other. He made no move to cover the seeping wound. He was just standing there, the hollows of his cheeks shadowed. The throbbing in my arm fell to the wayside as concern did take root. Are you sure you're all right? I asked. Maybe you should pull those arrows out or something. His throat worked on a swallow, and his lips parted. There was the barest hint of fangs.
Castile,
Kieran called out from behind us. The prince blinked, lifting his head to look over my shoulder. His pupils seemed even bigger, crowding out the amber of his irises. Instinct sent a shiver of warning through me.
I'm fine. You sure about that?
Kieran asked. I watched Castile closely, wondering what was wrong with him. Your eyes, I whispered. The pupils are really large.
They do that sometimes.
He cleared his throat, finally moving as he repeated louder,
I'm fine.
He wrapped the strip of cloak around my upper arm.
This may hurt.
It didn't feel all that great as he tightened the makeshift bandage, tying it so it stayed in place. Once done, he lowered my arm and draped the cloak over it. I watched him step back and look down at himself, still concerned for him. Thank you. His gaze flew to mine, and there seemed to be a bit of surprise in those odd eyes. He nodded and then looked at Kieran.
Are there any left? Those alive ran back to whatever homes they'd fashioned for themselves, Kieran stated. Nail is scouting up ahead to make sure we don't run into any more.
Wanting to know how these people knew what Kieran and Castile were, I twisted at the waist. Every single thought fled. My mouth dropped open. You're naked.
I am,
Kieran replied.
And he was. Like, completely naked. And I saw way too much tawny-hued skin. Way too much. I quickly spun around, my wide eyes clashing with Castile's. You should see your face right now.
Castile gripped the arrow in his stomach.
It looks like you've been sunbathing.
Because he's naked, I hissed. Like, super naked.
What do you think happens when he shifts forms?
The last time his pants actually stayed on.
And sometimes they don't,
Castile shrugged.
Those pants were looser, I suppose, Kieran stated. There's no need to be embarrassed. It's only skin.
What I saw was not only skin. He was, well, his body was a lot like Castile's. lean, hard muscle, and...
I wasn't going to think about what I saw.
At a loss for what to say, I blurted out in a whisper, "He has to be cold.
Woven body temperatures run higher than normal. I'm just a little chilled,"
Kieran commented,
"as I'm sure you noticed."
Castile smirked.
"I doubt she knows what you're referencing."
I inhaled deeply through my nose and exhaled slowly. "I know exactly what he's referencing, thank you very much."
"How do you know that?"
Castile lifted his brows, and I noticed that his pupils seemed to have returned to their normal size.
"If you know what it means, then someone has been very naughty."
"I know that because..." I sucked in air as he yanked the arrow free. "Oh, my gods."
"It looks worse than it is."
He tossed the arrow aside and then reached for the one in his left shoulder. I started to turn away, but remembered that what was behind me was far more traumatizing.
"I hope you have an extra set of clothes," I said to Kieran.
"I do.
As soon as Delano arrives with the horses, I'll be prim and proper again."
I flinched as Castile pulled the second arrow out.
"I don't think you've ever been prim and proper."
"That's true," Kieran said, and I thought he'd moved closer.
"You took out the mouthy one."
I nodded as Castile cursed when the arrow he'd been pulling on most likely got stuck on something important, like an organ.
"With your dagger?"
Kieran sounded impressed. "That and my sparkling personality." The wolven snorted.
"It was probably the latter that did him in."
My stomach twisted as Castile ripped out the third and final arrow. I swallowed. Hard. "I think he broke the bow, though."
"But he didn't break you."
Castile straightened his tunic, the tension bracketing his mouth easing.
"And that's all that matters."